I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm joined on the show by author Peter Gianni, who wrote the book Mary's Mosaic: The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. Peter Gianni was on 9/11 Wake Up Call on a two-part interview in June of 2013. To access that interview, you can go to the website www.radioforall.net, and that's the number for radioforall.net. Click on Contributor, and then click on Cheryl with a C, and the show should pop up. Peter Gianni, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on again.
Good to be with you, Cheryl, again. Thank you for having me back.
Now, Peter, in case there are people who didn't hear the previous interview we did back in June,
if you could just give kind of an overview of your connection to Mary Meyer and then her connection to JFK.
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C. in the 1950s and 1960s. My father was a career high-level CIA officer right at the very top. We socialized with the Meyer family. We socialized with the family of James Jesus Angleton, Richard Helms, Tracy Barnes, all the really top-flight people who were in the Central Intelligence Agency at that time were part of our social milieu. And, of course, with the Meyer family, my mother had gone to college with Mary Meyer, who was Mary Pinchot at the time, and she had married Cord Meyer, who was a friend of my father's, and I was best friends with the middle Meyer child, Michael, who was unfortunately accidentally killed when we were both 9 years old. He was hit by a car. But I didn't know at the time, later on, Michael was killed, I think, in 1957. It really wasn't until 1959 or 60 that Mary had began to consider a serious relationship with JFK. The two had actually met back in 1936 at a prep school dance where JFK had gone to school in Connecticut, the Choate School in Wallingford, Connecticut. And she was someone else's date. She was actually the date of William Atwood, who would become a member of JFK's cabinet later on. But it was then that the two met. There were some sparks that flew at that time, but there wasn't anything lasting at that time. I think Mary was very intuitive about who Jack Kennedy was at that time. He was kind of a wealthy playboy, and she was interested in a much more substantial relationship. And of course, she would go on to marry one of JFK's chief rivals, Cord Meyer, after World War II, actually in 1945. So, of course, all of this was not known to me until 1976, when the story broke in the National Enquirer that Mary Meyer and President Kennedy had had a very serious relationship the last 2 years of his life.
And then could you briefly tell us about her assassination?
Well, after JFK was assassinated in November of 63, Mary, of course, was just shocked and I think pretty much grief-stricken. And she spent the following year, 1964, really trying to understand what had happened. Now, Mary had a lot of access in Washington. She knew a lot of important people. She knew a lot of people in the White House. She knew how to get to these people. And, of course, many in the senior staff, particularly people like Kenny O'Donnell and Dave Powers, who were actually riding in the motorcade in Dallas in 1963, knew that the fatal shots that killed JFK had come from in front of the motorcade, not behind the motorcade, as the Warren Commission wanted people to believe. The kill shot came from the picket fence on the grassy knoll. And, of course, there's some evidence that Mary met with Kenny O'Donnell and was told of this. Kenny O'Donnell actually told Tip O'Neill essentially the same story in Tip O'Neill's book. So this was not new information. But during 1964, she was keeping a diary, something that she had done off and on most of her life. And she was putting together this mosaic of pieces of evidence that she was putting together. And when the Warren Commission came out in September of 64, she was just outraged and realized that not only had there been a conspiracy to kill the president, but there was now an ongoing conspiracy to cover up what had happened. And it was at this point, immediately after the Warren Commission, that she made a decision to go public. She was going to speak out about the fact of her affair, about what she had found out. She was going to go public with this information, and this was not to be allowed to happen. And it was here that I contend that the Central Intelligence Agency and the people high up in it, including her ex-husband and including the godfather of her children, who was James Jesus Angleton, decided that they had to take her out. And in fact, I subsequently found out that my own father was part of this conspiracy to terminate her life.
What was that like for you to discover that?
Well, it's been traumatic. There's no other word I think I could say. I mean, it's something that I had to struggle with a long time. I essentially finally put the pieces together, I think it was in 2008, and I was still, of course, deeply at work on the book, and there was a period of several months where I just had to stop work. In fact, being a clinical psychologist by profession, I actually put myself back in psychotherapy because I knew that I really needed to come to terms with this and to keep unraveling it, or I was not going to be able to finish this book. And with some hard work, I went on that trajectory, and it was a very good thing that I did because it really allowed me to come to terms with what had happened and to get back to work, which I seriously wanted to do.
Yeah, so here you have all these people that are connected socially, and then yet they're murdering one of their own social connections, and an ex-wife, actually. So that's pretty intense.
Well, it's very intense because there are very... You have to understand that the people in Washington at this time, most of them, the ones that still remain, you got to remember, we're coming up... This is the 49th anniversary of Mary Myers' death, and of course the 50th anniversary of JFK's, but a lot of these people aren't living anymore. But there has just been a massive amount of denial in and around Washington about this event. And of course, not one media outlet in Washington has dared touch my book. It hasn't been reviewed. No one talks about it in the media. There aren't any radio programs that have talked about it in Washington, certainly no television programs. And there's just been a very intense effort to keep this book swept under the rug as much as possible. Fortunately for us, we have things like the internet. We have a lot of radio shows like yours. We have cable stations who are willing to buck the trend and allow this book to come out into the public realm. And it's done fairly well. I mean, I think the book has probably sold over 20,000 copies now. The second edition came out this fall. So I'm optimistic that the word is going to get out and continue to get out. But I think your listeners should really understand that, like the Kennedy assassination itself, there has been a real intense effort to deny the real facts of the murder of Mary Pinchot Meyer.
Now, you said that the second edition of the book just came out, and I'm wondering, is there different information in there? How is it different from the first edition?
Well, in the second edition, there is a new postscript chapter in the book, because after the first edition came out, I, through some fortunate circumstances, was able to locate the man who I allege in the first edition was part of the assassination team of Mary Meyer. His name is William Mitchell. And I finally found him after the first edition came out, and I confronted him on his doorstep in August of 2012. He was not happy to see me, to put it mildly. And he got very angry that I had found him. And so I spent pretty much the next year with my research team researching Mr. Mitchell in ways that I had not been able to before. And so the essence of that postscript chapter is the story, from my point of view, of who William Mitchell is and what was he actually doing. I don't want to spoil it for your listeners, because I think the chapter itself is a very good read, but there's lots of new information in there, and the saga is still continuing to this day.
Wow, all right, so you're not going to share with us anything about William Mitchell.
You know, I will say some things, that he has managed, in my opinion, to camouflage himself very, very well. I'm still hot on his trail in terms of other relevant research that I'm doing, but I can't disclose at the moment what that is. I have attempted to take Mr. Mitchell to court in a wrongful death lawsuit in Washington, D.C., and that matter is still pending. There are certain dimensions of that case that I'm not allowed to discuss at the moment, but that will probably change by the end of the year. It's a fascinating study. I think it's very possible that Mr. Mitchell is one of the last remaining people in this caper who could really tell us possibly what actually took place on that day that Mary Meyer's life was terminated. He may also be able to tell us some other things. I just don't know yet, and there are certain details, unfortunately, that I cannot disclose at this time.
Yeah, what kind of a reaction did you get when you knocked on his door?
Well, I introduced myself. I had a copy of the book in my hand. I asked if I could speak to him, and he was vociferously opposed to that. And basically, in a matter of about 20 seconds, after we had some words, he shut the door in my face. Luckily, I came equipped with a secret digital recorder, and I recorded the conversation, because I wanted certain people to know that I wasn't making this up, that this little encounter had, in fact, taken place. I took it back to Washington, D.C., to the Metropolitan Police Force, and I've had a number of meetings with a senior homicide detective who would like very much to reopen the investigation to this case. That matter is also still pending, but it's been another sort of fascinating roller coaster ride. And I think with some other revelations still to come.
Now, I understand that attorney William Pepper, who did the King trial in 1999 and is currently representing Sirhan Sirhan, has gotten involved in this investigation. Is he the one doing the case against William Mitchell?
Yes. I retained attorney William Pepper because he's one of the few attorneys I think that could take on a case of this magnitude and do it justice. So, you know, we have filed the case back in late August of this year. But as I said, there are certain things pending in the case, which I just can't go into at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there will be, I think, some breakthroughs one way or another, possibly before the end of the year. I think if, as we get closer to the end of the year, I'll be able to say more about it. But yes, Attorney Pepper has been working very hard with me on this matter, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I really want to applaud you for your efforts in this and going this far, because there are state crimes against democracy, as they say, and it's not just JFK and Mary Meyer. It goes on to other events and some of the same people, so I think it's really good to reveal what they're doing.
Well, fortunately, Cheryl, I agree with you. It's a pity that our government isn't taking a more aggressive stand in these matters. But the sad truth of the matter is that the powers behind our government have been the ones responsible for keeping people in the dark for the last 50 years about the Kennedy assassination, about Mary Meyer's murder. And their effort is to keep people confused, to keep people from really knowing the truth. Because if people really know the truth, then they feel confident about taking action one way or another. If it's just an opinion or a suspicion of a possible conspiracy here or there, it's not enough to get people motivated to do something about it. So it's really unfortunate that we have entered this era where it's clear and clearer that we are living in a national security state. I mean, when you look at all the stuff that has come out recently with what Edward Snowden has revealed to us in terms of the National Security Agency and all the snooping that's been going on there. I mean, this is still just the tip of the iceberg. This is the same power structure, in my opinion, that has kept the public in the dark or kept the public confused about the Kennedy assassination. The CIA today still probably has at least 1,100 or 1,200 documents, probably as many as 50,000 pages of documents that it will not release in the National Archives. And this is horrendous. I mean, they act as if they are accountable to no one, when in fact they are accountable to the citizens of this democracy, or what's left of it. But you see, this is the kind of shenanigans that the national security state allows organizations like the NSA or the CIA to continually get away with. And it's very, very unfortunate. It's very tragic and sad, because we look at where our country is going today, and it's going into the toilet. It's becoming increasingly dysfunctional. And until we know the truth, which we have a right to know, we live in a democracy, the real truth of our history should be available to us all the time. But until we know the truth about things like either Kennedy assassination, Martin Luther King's assassination, I maintain we cannot heal as a country and go forward on a more positive trajectory.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And also, because they get away with it each time, they get bolder and bolder. And I believe that 9/11 was another piece along that trajectory. And then they've used that to really ramp up their efforts to put us in a police state. They use 9/11 and terrorism to have more classified documents and, you know, to take away our civil liberties. So,
well, you know, we've never had the hearing on 9/11. We should have. When you have over 2,000 licensed structural engineers and registered architects going on record saying that those buildings were brought down by controlled demolition, it wasn't the crashing of the planes into the buildings that brought them down. It was controlled demolition. They were blown up from the bottom up. That is a very, very significant indictment on our government and its refusal to examine what has truly taken place here. And I think there's a case to be made that there were elements of 9/11 that were planned by certain forces, because it would give the national security state an excuse afterwards to clamp down in many, many ways, which we have seen since 2001. We have become a more repressive state ever since that event took place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. And I want to ask you now, is Cord Meyer still alive, or Angleton? Or
no, they're all gone. Cord Meyer died in 2001. I think Angleton died in the early 1990s or late 1980s. All the heavyweights there have since departed.
And have you had any threats to your life? Or strange happenings since you've written the book?
Well, I've never had any overt threats, Cheryl. I did talk to someone who had a very complex career within the intelligence world, and he told me flat out, he said, Peter, what you're doing is really dangerous, and I assure you, you're not going to be warned. They'll just do it. And so I took that to mean that was the threat. It wasn't like there were going to be creepy phone calls or weird letters written to me. It would just be done if they thought it should be done. I think right now it's too late. To take me out right now would only cause to infuse much greater suspicion since the book is out. A lot of the information is out. A lot of people are talking about the book in any number of places in this country, in Europe, and other countries. So were I to die under suspicious circumstances, it would backfire in terms of arousing further suspicion.
Now, you just mentioned Europe. Are you having a good response to the book in other countries?
Well, I had one small offer to come over to England, but it just was too expensive just to do it for one outlet. But yes, there are several articles in journals and papers that have mentioned the book that talk about it. In England and in Germany, per se, are the two biggest places where the book has landed. I suspect, you know, as this resolution to the Mitchell case becomes more apparent, that there'll be more. I don't know how long that will take, but probably in the next 6 months or less, there'll be some other developments in that area as well.
Now, you mentioned the new information in the second edition of the book about the Mitchell, and then it sounds like you're constantly doing more research on Mary's death. Have you come up with anything else that wasn't in the first edition?
I have not come up with anything more about the murder itself. There are some things that have come up in connection with Mr. Mitchell that I just am not at liberty to talk about yet. But I will, when it becomes appropriate to do that, of course, I will be able to talk about it. And hopefully, as I said earlier, that might take place before the end of this year or very early next year.
Is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners that we haven't talked about?
Well, I would just encourage your listeners to really understand that it is up to each of them to get involved in any way they can. I think to our benefit, we have the internet, which has just become an invaluable research tool. And there have been just many, many good books written on the Kennedy assassination, for instance, some of which are just coming out in the last year. But there's no reason for anyone to be confused or unsure anymore, because I think the basic research has been completed, and it clearly shows that there was a conspiracy at the highest levels of our government to assassinate President Kennedy. And it's just unavoidable to come to that conclusion in this day and age. No matter people like Scott Pelley on CBS News or Chris Matthews on MSNBC, they want you to believe that this disaffected lone nut Oswald killed Kennedy. Oswald never fired a shot that day. And people really need to understand that this has been a complete fantasy and a complete joke in a way that our government has pushed this on its citizenry. And it's only by us getting involved and becoming empowered where we can take back our country and reclaim our country and get it on a more positive track. I think that the biggest disappointment in the last 6 years has been President Obama. We all looked forward at the end of the Bush era to President Obama coming in and ushering in a new era of what could be possible for our democracy. Instead, he has supported the American empire. He has made it more and more difficult for transparency in government, something that he campaigned that he would do. It's really been a huge disappointment, in my opinion, in terms of what he has done as a president. I mean, this whole debacle around the health care rollout, again, is just another indication of, in my opinion, of his incompetence.
I wonder if it's incompetence or if some of it's planned. Either way, it won't happen or it won't work, or even if it does, it looks like it's a handout to the corporations anyway.
Well, it's certainly a handout to the insurance industry. And the problem there, Cheryl, was this. When the healthcare movement got underway, over 60% of people in this country wanted some kind of Medicare for All public option. And Obama could have picked up that mantle and ran with it. And he could have really pushed to give the American public what they wanted. Instead, what we got was a giveaway to the health insurance industry, and here we are today, mired down in more confusion, and it's a travesty. It's a travesty that our country has to endure the kind of health care accessibility that we have when other industrialized countries just do so much better at this because they have some form of socialized medicine.
It is a travesty what we have here. There's, 46 million people who have no insurance at all. And then some of us who do have it, it's not a great plan.
No.
Peter, how can people access or get a copy of the new book?
The book is readily available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. I think it's under $20 now. And I'll be speaking at a number of places on the East Coast as well as in California between now and the end of the year. And I generally bring books with me and sign them for people who want them. So it's a very easy book to get. I think it's in a lot of bookstores now. It's available.
Peter, we're running out of time. I really want to thank you for being on the show again today. And definitely when you have more information on Mr. Mitchell, I'd love to have you on the show again.
I look forward to it, Cheryl. Thank you for having me again.
And again, that was an interview with psychologist and author Peter Gianni, who wrote the book Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. The first edition of the book came out in 2012, and the second edition has recently been released with a new chapter on his confrontation with one of the alleged assassins of Mary Myers. And some really good news, Peter Gianni will be speaking at the University of Hartford on Wednesday, December 4th at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium. And again, that's Wednesday, December 4th at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium. He'll also have books with him and be doing a book signing. So mark your calendars for Wednesday, December 4th at 7 p.m. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.